Breakfast on Cork's Red FM.
And Johnny Sexton's declared himself fit for Sunday's Six Nations clash against Wales in Cardiff.
Can I do that? Can I just declare myself fit? Contrary to all popular evidence.
Finally, Ray Foley has declared himself fit ahead of Sunday's game against Wales.
Walking around with the inside roll of the kitchen towel. I'm fit. I'm fit. Just to let you know, everybody, I'm fit. That man's deluded.
With Ray Foley. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m. on Cork's Red FM. The Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.
He certainly is deluded. Ray's back tomorrow morning from 6 on Cork's Red FM. But for now, you're listening to The Big Red Bench. Roy here with you until 7 p.m. and a busy show coming your way over the next 60 minutes. Reaction to come from Cardiff after Ireland, 14-man Ireland at that, lose to Wales in the Six Nations opener, 21-16. We'll be talking to former Ireland and Munster scrum half Tomás O'Leary about that in just a little bit. Also to come on the show tonight, we're going to be previewing Super Bowl 55 tonight, the Kansas City Chiefs and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We're talking to Cork Admirals head coach Alan Lemastney. We're also going to hear from Cork footballer Rory Dean after Sports Direct announced their new sponsorship of Cork GA for the next 5 years. I'm going to keep up to date now on the Premier League action as well, but for now, you're listening to The Big Red Bench on Cork's Red FM. And just as I said, that Man City have gone 2-1 up away to Liverpool. Gundogan with the goal for City. A tap-in from close range. Some nice work from City. Some poor defensive work from Liverpool. We'll get you an report on that one in just a bit. Shane Pennington's at Anfield. First, though, to Cardiff and Hamish Stewart.
Hung on to win this one by 21 points to 16, but it was a stroke of luck at the end. Ireland were pushing for that match-winning try, and they had a penalty which Billy Burns, the outside half, kicked to the corner, but he missed, got the wrong side of the corner flag, and the ball went dead, and Wales escaped with a victory. Second half tries by George North and Louis Rees-Summit were just enough against the 14 men of Ireland after the sending off of Peter Omani, the flanker. So, well, Ireland pretty more the impressive team, but Wales getting the win.
Yeah, it's an interesting game to discuss that one. We'll be joined on the line by Tomás O'Leary in just a little bit. Lots to talk about. Peter Mahoney's red card, Billy Burns, that kick at the death. Well, he'll be thinking about that one for the rest of his career. But a frustrating day for Ireland over in Cardiff. In the Premier League, as I mentioned, Liverpool are trailing Manchester City by 2-1 at Anfield. 74 minutes gone on the clock there in today's big game in the Premier League. And it was City who went ahead in that game before Mo Salah equalised from the penalty spot. And Gundogan with his second goal of the game there to put City ahead. And that's how things stand at the moment. Earlier on today, it finished in victory for Tottenham as they defeated West Brom by 2-0. Andrew Cheel was watching that one.
Spurs 2-0. Harry Kane surprisingly declared fit to start, fluffed 4 chances in the first half, but 4 minutes into the second he stroked home after Højbjerg's precise pass put him up. Son quickly doubled the lead after a penetrating run and pass by Lucas Moura. Albion's Diagne forced just one save from Lloris in the Spurs goal all match. Albion looked a lost cause. Spurs season back on track. Spurs 2-0.
Scores between Wolves and Leicester today. Alex Winter was at Molineux.
Full time it's finished. Wolves 0, Leicester City 0 at Molineux. Both sides went for the win and both sides did have the chances to finish this game off. The best Wolves chance fell to Silva in the 77th minute. The ball fell to him. Everybody thought he was offside. He wasn't. He had the chance to put it past Schmeichel, but Schmeichel just got the tip of his foot to it to glance it wide of the post. In the dying seconds of the game, Jamie Vardy, who'd come on as sub in the 60th minute, just got in a glancing header. It flashed wide of the upright. It's finished. Wolves 0, Leicester 0.
One more game tonight, Sheffield United and Chelsea. Dave Easton's at Bramall Lane.
A chance for Chelsea to make it into the top five under new boss Thomas Tuchel. It's also a chance for Sheffield United to lift themselves off the bottom of the league and past that 11-point mark set by Derby. Both sides look to be without Chelsea centre-back. Thiago Silva has a thigh strain, while Ethan Ampadu can't face his parent club. After wins over Manchester United and West Brom in recent weeks, and 5 wins out of 7 in all, can the Blades now blunt the Blues? It's Sheffield United against Chelsea at Bramall Lane.
And while Dave Eastman's reporting there, Man City have gone 3-1 up on Liverpool. More poor defensive work from Liverpool. Mistake from Alisson, hands the ball to a City player who crosses for Raheem Sterling to head home from a yard out. Not even I would have missed that goal, but City are 3-1 up at Liverpool. 76 minutes on the clock. We'll get your report on that one as soon as we can. Now, elsewhere today in women's football, Cork's Megan Connolly ending Chelsea's 33-game unbeaten run today. Connolly scoring direct from a corner as Brighton and Hove Albion defeated the reigning league champions by 2-1. Connolly set up the first for Albion. That's her corner from the head of Aileen Whelan as well. So great day for the Cork one. Elsewhere in the Scottish Premiership, Rangers dropping points this afternoon as they drew 1-1 all the way to bottom side Hamilton. They're still 21 points clear of Celtic though at the top of the table. Roy McIlroy 5-under par through 4 holes of his final round at the PGA Tour's Waste Management Phoenix Open. That leaves the Northern Ireland native 13 shots off the pace. It's being shared by the Americans Jordan Spieth and Xander Schauffele. Elsewhere in racing, the Willie Mullins trained Ken Boy with his nephew Danny on board won the Paddy Power Irish Gold Cup on day 2 of the Dublin Racing Festival at Leopardstown today. The favourite Manella Indo could only manage 4th behind the Storyteller and Delta Work. And what was a great day for Mullins, the Grade 1 Chanel Pharma Novice Hurdle was won by his Appreciated with Paul Townend on board going off as favourite. And the other Grade 1 contest of the day, the Tattersalls Ireland's Spring Juvenile Hurdle, claimed by the Gordon Elliott trained Qualixius, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. The 4-year-old was guided to victory by Jack Kennedy after going off 4-6 on favourite. And the Super Bowl tonight, 11:30 kickoff Irish time. Tom Brady playing in his record 10th Super Bowl, his Tampa Bay Buccaneers side going up against the Kansas City Chiefs tonight in an eagerly anticipated showdown that gets underway at 11:30 Irish time. Right, still no report in from Anfield. We'll get you that in a bit. As Liverpool trail Manchester City by 3-1, and that's surely Liverpool's title defence over and done with if that result stays the same way. But we are going to talk rugby to kick off the show tonight. Tomás O'Leary is on the line. We're going to talk to the former Ireland and Munster and Lions scrum half in just a second. First, though, going to hear from Ireland head coach Andy Farrell talking to the BBC after today's game. And first, talking about Peter O'Mahony's red card.
You know, we've seen red cards for that in the past, haven't we? You know, and I think we've seen one or two yellow cards as well for other incidents that didn't quite go our way, but that's another story.
How frustrated are you with Peter O'Mahony? Because, you know, it's such a big issue in the game. The players are aware of it. You cannot go lead with an arm into somebody's head.
Look, he's been around enough for a long time and he's gutted in there, you know. He's been a pretty stalwart player for us in the past, you know, and he'll continue to do so in the future.
You responded really well, 13 unanswered points. What was the main message within the group in terms of coping with 14?
No, the strategy was good. We had a plan. We understood how we wanted to play. Regarding that plan with 14 men, I thought we dealt with that well. It wasn't that lost us the game, was it? It was one or two silly penalties, one or two errors on our point, a missing touch, as you say, a couple of times as well. It's those type of things that lost us the game in the end, but at the end of the day, I thought it was an unbelievably brave effort from our boys, you know, to take it to the death there, and you know, hopefully if that ball did go in touch, we're in with a chance, who knows, you know, but a valiant effort, but obviously not good enough today.
All right, that was head coach Andy Farrell speaking to the BBC after today's game. Delighted to be joined by our good friend, former Ireland and Munster scrum half, Tomás O'Leary. Tomás, how are you, sir?
I'm fantastic. And yourself, Rory?
Good, good. Can't complain. Before we get into the match, how's lockdown been treating you? It's been a strange old year.
It is. Like, I think, you know, everyone at this stage is just coping, really. You know, similar to yourself there with two smallies at home, you know, trying to keep them entertained and busy. It's tough, like, and then obviously working away as well. But look, hopefully, you know, there's a bit of end in sight if we can kind of look towards the summer. But look, I'm surviving, same as the rest of us.
All right, just on today's game, Tomás, two major talking points from an Ireland perspective. We'll get to Billy Burns in a bit, but Peter Mahony's red card changed that game. There was no question about it. It was a red card, first off.
Yeah, it was a red card. Look, I don't think Peter would have gone intentionally to target him, but look, he's gone in very aggressively at the rock, and it was reckless, and obviously made contact with the head area. So look, definite red card, and had a major impact on the game. Obviously, Irish the Irish team rebounded for the following 20 minutes of the first half and were really, really impressive. But I guess the energy that they expended, you know, through that kind of first half with 14 men kind of had its toll and kind of told in the second half.
Now, Peter O'Mahony's not a dirty player, obviously, but he was fired up for that game. You could see that when the way he was belting out Ireland's call just before the game started. So he was really intense and really fired up going into that game.
He was. Look, everyone kind of knows at this stage Peter's passion is one of his key strengths and components. And look, that's how he leads with Munster and with Ireland. You know, he's captain Munster, Ireland and the Lions. And the battle of the breakdown is key at every game. And teams have to be aggressive. And if the Irish team were lacking aggression and lacking physicality at the breakdown, you know, supporters, fans, everyone would be giving out about it. So, look, it's a fine line. And unfortunately, you know, Peter found himself on the wrong side of that line. So, look, I don't think he's going to change too much about that element of passion and physicality in his game. But obviously, he needs to, I suppose, have a duty of care to his fellow players. Probably needs to be a bit more careful. And look, he learned from that.
However, the 26 minutes after he got sent off in the remaining part of the first half, Ireland were excellent. They were the better team, even with 14 men.
Yeah, they were really impressive, and I think you could see elements of the game plan that Andy Farrell is trying to install in this Irish team. You know, from a score half point of view, I noticed, you know, there was multiple, you know, people passing the ball. Like before Peter got sent off, he was passing from nine. Cedar Stander, I saw, had a couple of score half passes as well. So they're trying to move the ball. They got a bit more width, particularly when they got closer to the opposition kind of 22, you saw them spreading the Welsh defence and getting little holes. So, yeah, it was very, very kind of encouraging signs. And obviously, Robbie Henshaw's try was particularly good. I know he kind of went back in the blind side and beat a couple of men before offloading to Van der Fleer, and obviously Tadhg Byrne then, who had a great game, finished it. So, yeah, very, very encouraging signs. And look, hopefully, you know, if we had 15 men, you know, we could have maybe put the Welsh team under more and more pressure. So, look, encouraging signs, and there's positives to take from the performance.
It was always going to be the case, though, that they were going to tire and that Wales were going to apply the pressure, and they did that in the second half. Wales came out from the half-time break just looking like a different team.
They did, and I think while Ireland were kind of excellent for that, maybe 26 minutes, we said, after Peter O'Mahony was sent off in the first half, Ireland did probably contribute. You know, Keith Earls was the tackle, one of the Welsh wingers in the air, and then kind of kicked out in the full, giving them field position to get into our 22. And then, I suppose, we Irish defence was good, and we won the ball back, and we had a scrum where we kind of exited, Ringrose beat the first man and tried to offload. Conor Murray, he knocked it on, and then the Welsh team, after a couple of phases, you saw George North score and capitalise on those mistakes. So while Wales were improved, I think a lot of it was down to Ireland's error count as well, and they'll be looking to eradicate those errors and, I suppose, control those mistakes this time next week against France. So, yeah, I think the energy that they expended in the first half with 14 men kind of told, and like the Keith Earls made some uncharacteristic mistakes.
Yeah, and as you say, like, just uncharacteristic mistakes, but a lot of mistakes in that second half, like kicking out on the full and missing touch, that kind of thing, and some soft penalties as well.
Exactly, and look, I know there'll be a lot of talk and a lot of criticism of Billy Burns, you know, for the missed kick at the end, and look, rightly so. Look, if you're playing in that pivotal out-half position in Ireland, you know, they're the plays you have to make, and you know that's the pressure that you have to be able to deal with. He also kind of threw a very bad pass to the ground after Ireland had broken up the blind side and kind of lost the momentum in an earlier phase of play. So look, it wasn't probably his best 15-20 minutes for Ireland. Likewise, look, Sexton also missed a kick to touch earlier in the second half as well, which alleviated pressure on Wales. So I think Ireland's probably kicking game can improve. I thought Lowe kicked well, to be fair to him, to exit. But look, on the flip side then, look, he probably got caught a little bit tight for that George North try too. So look, there is a lot of, I suppose, elements that Ireland can control, and Billy Burns kicking to touch, you know, he'll improve, he'll learn from that, and he'll probably learn to deal with the pressure of being Ireland's out half.
You can only imagine the feeling that Billy Burns had, though, when that ball left his foot and he realised that's not going to find touch.
Yeah, look, I guess, you know, he's trying to put his full pack 5 metres from the, yeah. from the wedge line and gave them every opportunity to you know, to maul the wedge team over. And look, he's pushing the envelope there. He could have probably taken the easy option and kicked it 10 metres from the wedge line. And then if Ireland didn't score, maybe he'd been criticised for not going for it. So it's, look, it's like I said, when you're playing international rugby and you're in that position, you have to embrace that pressure. And look, obviously he'd be gutted, you know, after the game for failing to, you know, execute, for failing to kick the Irish team into the corner and give them at least a shot. So look, it's probably a harsh lesson for him. I think his teammates will obviously come up and support him. But look, it's just a kind of steep learning curve for him playing international rugby, particularly when the Irish lineout seem to be, I suppose, showing the effects of having Paul O'Connell at the helm. And, you know, they were very, very competitive on the Welsh ball, and their own ball, they looked a lot safer and a lot more assured.
Don't have too long now to lick their wounds, I suppose, ahead of next week's game with Wales. From your own experience, Tomás, being with Irish camps, when you lose a game in the Six Nations, I mean, like, how do you pick yourselves back up? I mean, what's the process like from here on out now until next week?
I suppose, look, the main thing from now would be for those lads to just recover. So they'll be doing the ice baths in the Principality in the Millennium Stadium already. They'll obviously be just recovering as best they can. Tomorrow will be a recovery day, active recovery, once they get back into camp. So, you know, there'll be massages, stretching, going to the pool, all that kind of stuff. So it's just recovery from then. And I suppose tomorrow as well, we'll have obviously the review of the game. So, look, they might do an element of that tomorrow. They might just leave it till Tuesday to give the players a bit of I suppose a mental break. Then it's a case of analysing the game, obviously focusing on elements that they can improve, the controllables that, you know, that they let the Welsh team back in, but also focusing on the positives of the game. So they're kind of reinstilling that confidence within the team, and then obviously looking forward to the French challenge. So look, as rugby players, as sports people, you know you're going to lose, and that's part of life. You just have to bounce back and react to it. So that's where you see the kind of character of the players. And look, all the players will want to get straight back on the bike and hope that they're selected for next week for the French game. And look, if you can get a victory over France, then you know you'll have France having lost the game, England having lost the game. Obviously, Wales may or may not have lost the game, so the championship will be back wide open. So while the Grand Slam is gone, the championship is very much still up for grabs.
And it's France coming to town next week. They had a 50-10 win over Italy. Now, Italy were poor, France were good, but probably can't read too much into that game yesterday, can we?
Not too much, but look, France's form over the last 12, 18 months has been impressive. You see that, look, you know, their nine is probably the best nine in the world at the moment, but the likes of Teddy Thomas, you know, in the back three, he's lethal. But I think up front is where they've got their act together, really. The likes of Livion at number eight there is unbelievable, and they've got a really, really good front row. So look, they're a well coached team now, and even the impact that Sean Edwards, as defensive coach, has on them, that's very noticeable. So look, while we all know about the dangers they possess in their attack, their defence has kind of become a real tight-knit unit and an area of strength for them too. So they're becoming a harder team to score tries against and to break down. So yeah, can't read too much into the Italy game, but you know, they've illustrated over the last 12 months that they're a really, really top level team, and a really physical team that can punish you with the skill level that they have too. So it's going to be a very, very difficult challenge for Ireland to bounce back from the Welsh team.
And if you're Andy Farrell, what changes would you be looking at to make for next Sunday? Obviously, Peter Manny's going to be missing. Johnny Sexton could be out after taking that knock to the head.
Yeah, it's kind of difficult to analyse it straight away. I suppose the centres were particularly impressive, so that's a benefit. Interesting to see, does he stick with Billy Burns now after the game? Mm. If he felt he was good enough to be Sexton's backup for this game, I would imagine that the coach should have the strength of character to, you know, to give him the opportunity to make a couple of mistakes and bounce back. So I would imagine that he'll give Burns the opportunity. Maybe if Sexton isn't starting, and see how he goes. And aside from that, back row, the likes, I suppose you could always move Tadhg Byrne into the into the second row and then start with a different second row combination. I thought Byrne was unbelievable today. I don't know what the injury situation is with Doris. I know he was getting HIA assessment too, so look, obviously if any of the Leinster back rows are back fit, they'll come into the mix too. I'm not sure whether Coombs has progressed enough to be thrown in against the French as of yet, but it would be fantastic if he maybe nicked onto the panel. But look, there won't be too many changes to the team. Look, Keith Earls unfortunately might be I suppose might have to come off the team if they decide that they're going to make a change to back three and bring Lamar in, but just for the mistakes he made in the second half, he might be punished. But be interesting how many changes are made, but I don't think we'll make too many changes because of the decent Irish performance overall.
All right, Tomás. Pleasure talking to you as always, buddy, and I will chat to you soon. Thanks for talking to us today.
Thanks, Rory. Cheers.
That was a pleasure talking to our good friend Tomás O'Leary and defeat for Ireland today. 21-16 is how it finished. Of course, France to come next weekend. It's nearly over at Anfield. And what a scoreline this is.
It's Liverpool 1, Manchester City 4, and Phil Foden's just got in on the act with possibly the best goal of the afternoon. He picked up the ball just on the edge of the box to the right-hand side of the penalty area, cut in on his left foot, and absolutely smashed it high into the left-hand top corner, giving Alisson no chance whatsoever. It's Liverpool 1, Manchester City 4.
Literally just waiting on the full-time whistle to go there at Anfield, but what a result that will be. In the Premier League title race, Man City looking almost untouchable at the moment. They're 5 points clear of Manchester United with a game in hand. They're 10 points clear of Liverpool with a game in hand. So you'd imagine that's Liverpool's title race done and dusted. City looking good. So it looks like it's only a matter of time before City are Premier League champions. But can Manchester United mount a challenge? Maybe not, but you never know. You never know. Still a couple of twists and turns, still a long way to go, but it's looking like City's title. And just waiting for the referee to blow a full-time whistle, and he has done. Liverpool 1, Man City 4 is how that has finished there at Anfield. Right, going to talk Gaelic games, and Cork's Rory Dean is eager to be back playing at matches again. The Bantry Blues man was speaking to Oisín Langan at the announcement of Sports Direct's new 5-year sponsorship of Cork GAA. He spoke of his hopes for 2021 and the Rebel surprise win over Kerry, the equally surprising loss to Tipperary in the Munster Championship.
Well, joined now by Cork senior footballer Rory Dean, following the announcement of Sports Direct's new 5-year sponsorship deal with Cork GAA, that will see Sports Direct support the men's senior, under 20 and minor teams in both codes and provide a new personalised boot partnership for the senior panels. The new Cork GAA jersey was also launched today. That's Thursday, just in case you're listening to this a few days after the fact, and celebrates the three core pillars of clubs, schools and county that together form the foundation of Cork GAA. The newly launched jersey is now available exclusively through Sports Direct Ireland online. You can get that on sportsdirect.com until stores across the country reopen. Rory, I suppose it's exciting to have some news at this time, because for players and fans, it's quiet, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose it's quiet given the circumstances at the moment in communities. But look, this is a positive development for Cork GAA, and hopefully it'll set a structure in place to keep our teams moving forward.
How are you handling the lockdown and the fact that you can't get together and train and play matches and do all the things that you want to be doing as an inter-county footballer?
I suppose looking back to the last Level 5 in September and thinking back to the positive times people had as a group training and getting matches in and seeing what that meant to people as those games were going on, it is challenging at the moment, but I suppose we're all playing our part by just doing our individual training sessions and being ready for when we do get the call to put back on the red jersey, that we're all in the best condition we can be and making sure that we're ready to go when that time does come.
How do you find the individual training? What do you get up to? How do you try and keep yourself ticking over, because it must be difficult when you know you can't go to a pitch, you can't go to a gym. It must be tough.
It is challenging, but I think most people kind of during March, April put together their own stuff. So in my garage here, I have a home gym kind of set up, so I'm lucky in the sense that I have that. And look, we're lucky, I'm living in Bantry in the countryside kind of, so within our 5 kilometre radius we have a lot of access to different things we can do to get running in parks and areas, green areas that we can get a bit of training done. So I suppose, look, we're trying to individually keep on top of it, but it is very challenging. Like, it's monotonous at times, but you know everyone else is in the same boat and you're just trying to try keep your best to keep going and be, as I said, in the best condition you can be when we get back on the green grass.
Yeah, and look, and like all intercounty footballers, you are not just an intercounty footballer. You have a job and you have a life like everyone else, and you're a teacher. Is that kind of keeping you occupied at the moment? Because, you know, in the last while, I guess, like so many other people, you've had to change everything about what you do and how you do it.
Yeah, I suppose like most teachers probably didn't see the transition too bad. I think we all learned from March, April, May last year quite well. But as a PE teacher, I'm normally used to being up and active, whereas now you're kind of sitting down in front of a screen much more. And I'm feeling the effects of that in my body, that I'm not moving as much as I used to be, and trying to adjust our lifestyles to that. And I think some of the kids have made some very good comments during school time. Like when you're on the computers, it's like you're in school 24/7 now, because when you're working and learning from home, there's no separation between your personal and your school life anymore, and it's challenging to get the balance. And I'm sure everyone that's faced with the situation of working from home at the moment feels the same. But look, we're all playing our part, as I said, and we'll try to keep that going.
I guess your advice to people would be try and get up and move as much as they can, stay active. And that's advice that, by the sounds of it, you're trying to listen to yourself and use yourself.
Yeah, and look, it is very challenging, as I said. Like, I'm not doing it myself. There's days there that I said to myself, oh, I'll go away at lunchtime there now and go for a walk, and the next thing it's 5-6 o'clock and it's dinner time to begin prepping that, and you lose track of your day very, very quickly. But I suppose if we're conscious and can put a plan in place for the following day, so we're 24 hours ahead, generally you can stick to your routine then.
Yeah, normally at this time of year you'd have played the McGrath Cup, you'd be into league, you'd be kind of maybe already casting half an eye towards championship. But it's different this time around. You've more time to think and more time to maybe look ahead and look back. And I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. Maybe a good thing when you think of the Kerry team, maybe a Kerry win, I should say, and a bad thing when you think of the Tip loss.
Yeah, so I suppose, look, everything was up and down last year for everybody in their personal lives. But for us in our sporting lives specifically, like, we had, I suppose, huge satisfaction with getting over the line. That brought huge positivity to the whole county of Cork after beating Kerry. But look, we saw very quickly that we had a setback a couple of weeks later against Tip. And it's not long knocking you back on your backside again. But look, we've reviewed both games. We've moved on for them. And hopefully they'll lead to positive performances again in 2021.
What are the main things you took from the Kerry game, and what are the main things you took from the Tipperary game? And are those things kind of different?
Yeah, they're polar opposites, if I'm to be perfectly honest. So I suppose we showed huge composure and confidence in our ability in the Kerry game. And like, we had a plan, we went out, we executed it for a full 90 minutes. We didn't deviate from it. And then you could actually go the complete opposite. It just fell apart completely against Tipperary. And there were hard questions asked of our players. We've asked hard questions of ourselves. Management have clearly done the same. And look, we're not doing that to be hard on ourselves. We're doing it to develop and move on. Like, this is a Cork team that's moving in the right direction. And that's what we want to get. There's nothing personal in it. No one would doubt to have a bad game on that day. But we're looking at using it to shape us positively going forward.
Is it about using the ball smarter than you did in the Tipperary game? Is it about kind of doing that on a consistent level? Is that the key?
100%. Like, look, it comes down to basics at the end of the day. They beat us in individual and team battles. We need to look at it, why it happened. We've done so, and hopefully we can use that information now to shape our performances, as you said, more consistently in 2021.
I think it's fair to say you're going into 2021 with a positive mindset. I mean, if you beat Kerry in a championship game, and I know you were beaten by Tip, and in fairness to you, you've said that on the day they were the better team, but if you've beaten Kerry in the championship, then you know you're not far off the top, or you're going the right way. And then you add in as well the fact that you got out of Division 3. You know, that's positive as well.
Yeah, and look, these are all stepping stones along our journey. And collectively as a group, we have our vision and we know what we're about. And like life, you're going to face setbacks in sport as well, and it's how you deal with those setbacks are going to shape you. It's not about sitting on the couch here now and feeling sorry for ourselves. We can take the positives and bring them forward into 21, but we can also take the negatives and use them and try to turn them into positives, and that's what's going to make us a better team. So hopefully we can make that happen.
A potential negative is a proposed ban for Ronan and the loss of the home advantage for league games. What have you made of that, and what's your reaction to it?
Yeah, to be honest, that's not something that I'm dealing with really at the moment, and it's an ongoing process that the county board are looking into, so I won't make a comment on it. It's in their hands kind of what to do with that situation.
I think that's fair enough. Are you a man that watches an awful lot of football, even that you're not involved in? I know that some players, they've no interest in watching other football, but do you like watch every game that's on, or what's your
generally, I'm mixed about this, right? I do enjoy watching it, obviously, as I enjoy playing it. But sometimes I feel if you're in the thick of it and really, really heavy into a season, it's nice to actually look outside your sport too. So I generally watch a lot of basketball on TV where I can. Now, obviously, different time zone looking into America, but where you can, I like looking back on previous games and seeing their skills and what they bring. Like, and I do think it crosses over to football a bit, but I wouldn't say I don't watch it, but when I'm in the thick of it myself, I feel we do a bit of analysis here and there on other teams as well. So it is important to switch off and focus on other aspects of life too.
As always, when one year turns to another, there's a change in the playing staff. Tom Clancy of Fermoy has retired. How big a loss is that?
Well, to be honest, like, Tom Cat has been with us since 2013, before I even started. And look, he's a great guy. His attitude was phenomenal in the Cork jersey, and he'd have done anything for any individual on the team, on or off the pitch. And the qualities he brought as a player were fantastic, but more so as a person. Like, he was just a very good individual to have in our setup, and he's not going to be replaced that easy, if at all. But look, he was a credit to the Cork jersey, and I was privileged to play alongside him for the years he was involved.
And will his presence be missed in the dressing room? Is that nearly as big a loss as missing him on the field?
Look, I suppose it is obviously going to be missed, right? And it is hard to replace fellas, but you're always looking at trying to bring people along as you're there. And I think Tom has done a good job at that. Like, he's such a good guy. He'd want to develop every player to become better on and off the field, as I mentioned. But as well as that, like, you'd hope that you're having strength and depth in panels at this stage, that you'll have people that will slot in. And I think the management have done a good job at getting continuity, that if someone to the standard of Tom Clancy does leave, that someone is ready to slot in his place as well. But look, he will be missed. He was a brilliant character to have in the panel. And, like, to be honest, I thank him for everything he's done for Cork GAA. It's been really positive on his behalf.
Rory, just before I let you go, I imagine you just cannot wait to get back and playing matches.
Yeah, look, the reason we all play football from 6 years to 10 years of age up until we finish is we want to play games. As I mentioned at the start, it's about, look, bringing a little bit of joy to people's lives again. We saw what football did before Christmas to people. It created a little bit of a buzz. It was something for people to do, especially in the bleak winter months. And look, hopefully that will continue. And I know club games as well as county games were streamed more this year. And I think it's something that will continue into 2021. And for those that are at home or abroad or sick or laid up and can't go to matches, that it'll be a positive development that they can get to see the game that they love on TV too.
Rory, appreciate your time. Thank you very much. Rory Dean joining us following the announcement of Sports Direct's new 5-year sponsorship deal with Cork GAA that will see Sports Direct support the men's senior, under 20 and minor teams in both codes and provide a new personalised boot partnership for the senior panels. The new Cork GAA jersey was also launched and celebrates the three core pillars of clubs, schools and county that together form the foundation of Cork GAA. The newly launched jersey is now available exclusively through Sports Direct Ireland online. That's sportsdirect.com until stores across the country reopen. Rory, thanks for joining us.
No problem.
Yeah, really interesting chat there with Rory Dean and Oisín Langan following that announcement earlier on in the week. All right, still to come on the show, Matt. It's been such a great day of sport already, and it certainly is not over. All eyes in the Super Bowl kicking off at 11:30 Irish time. We're talking to one of the best head coaches in the country, if not the best. Alan O'Masney of the Cork Admirals joins next.
The Big Red Bench.
Game on.
Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m.
At Specsavers, our stores are still open. So if you need a checkup or your hearing or sight isn't quite right, please get in contact. We're doing everything to make sure your safety comes first. From limiting the people in store to disinfecting glasses and test equipment. We'll be wearing protective gear too. So if you can't see our friendly faces behind our masks, we promise they're still there. Book an appointment online or call your nearest Specsavers store.
Rebels Bounty, a new members draw from the GAA, giving you the chance to win cash prizes every month, including a bumper prize of €100,000 for one lucky winner. With a record €500,000 in prizes to be won, sign up today for just €100. Your membership will benefit local clubs and the development of county teams. Become a member through your local club or gaacork.ie/rebelsbounty. Terms and conditions apply.
In this Monday's Irish Examiner, 1 year on from election 2020, we look back at the political tsunami it unleashed and ask whether it's time to get ready for Taoiseach Mary Lou. In sport, our squad of experts analyse an action-packed weekend. Simon Lewis and Donal Lenihan review Ireland's Six Nations opener against Wales. And can Man City extinguish Liverpool's title hopes? Only in this Monday's Irish Examiner. Get the Irish Examiner delivered free to your door. Sign up at newsdelivery.ie.
Hi, I'm Connor, the brand new host of Green on Red. Join me for my very first show Sunday from 7 for the very best in Irish music. From established acts to up-and-coming artists, with a focus on the amazing music coming straight out of Cork.
Green on Red, Sundays from 7 on Cork's Red FM.
Missed the show? Grab the Big Red Bench podcast at redfm.ie. The Big Red Bench.
Rory here on the bench until 7pm. Full-time report from Anfield, Shane Pennington.
Liverpool 1, Manchester City 4, and Pep Guardiola finally has a win at Anfield to his name as his side moved 5 points clear at the top, and more importantly maybe, created a 10-point gap between his side and the champions. Ilkay Gundogan missed the first half penalty before he eventually put his side in front. Mo Salah then equalised for Liverpool from the penalty spot before Gundogan and then Sterling both profited from mistakes from Alisson in the Liverpool goal. Phil Foden finished off a near perfect afternoon for the visitors, smashing home a fourth from 20 yards out. Liverpool 1, Manchester City 4.
Teams are in for Sheffield United and Chelsea. Dave Easton.
Three changes for Chelsea, who can go fifth with a win here at Bramall Lane this evening. Thiago Silva has a thigh strain, Andreas Christensen comes in for him. Ben Chilwell comes in for Marcos Alonso on the left. Olivier Giroud starts up front for Callum Hudson-Odoi, the Frenchman's 250th Premier League appearance. Four changes for Sheffield United. Ampadu can't face his parent club Chelsea, so Keane Bryan comes in the centre of defence. Also out, Baldock, Sharp and McGoldrick. In come Max Lowe and Oliver's Burke and McBurney. A point for the Blades gets them off the bottom of the Premier League. At Sheffield United, at Bramall Lane, is Sheffield United against Chelsea.
Okay, Super Bowl 55 tonight. The 14-2 Kansas City Chiefs going up against the 11-5 Tampa Bay Buccaneers. For more on it, joined by our good friend, one of the finest football minds in this country, the head coach of the Cork Admirals, Alan Lemasney. Alan, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Rory. How are you keeping?
I'm good, boy. I'm good. Great to talk to you. We'll talk about the Admirals in a bit. First off, just before we talk about the Super Bowl, Alan, overall, the NFL season and COVID, how did it affect the season? And I suppose, what impact, I suppose, did it have on this current year?
Yeah, it has been obviously a year like one and no other because of the fact that in the NFL, they have to, you know, they love practice and preparing for things. So to have the preseason taken away from them, to have, you know, not been able to get meetings together before the season, I suppose it took everybody down a level, I suppose, to a certain extent. But to be fair, you know, they managed. There were some games rescheduled to play a bit later, but they put a big effort into making sure all the games were played. And I think, to be honest, they've scored more points, I think, this year than ever before. So it has certainly been a good season, even with all of the COVID going on.
It's been strange watching games, though, with no fans in the grounds, especially, like, you know, on big third downs when you expect the home crowd to be on top of the opposing quarterback making all that noise.
Yeah, it is very strange, and especially when you see the cardboard cutouts in the stands. It looks very weird. It is actually, from a fan point of view, it's actually quite interesting because you can actually hear or know quite a lot of what's being said on the field. Mm. You know, from an inside point of view, you get to hear a lot of the calls and a lot of the, you know, the timing and stuff that's going on. But I think it definitely took home field advantage away for a lot of teams. And even there in Green Bay, when Tampa and Green Bay, like, they had some few thousand in Green Bay, but like you would have thought going to Green Bay in January was going to be a big problem. But having no crowd there certainly was a great advantage, I think, for the Bucs in the end.
And just looking at the two teams in tonight's Super Bowl, the Kansas City Chiefs obviously going for back-to-back titles and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I'm not sure many people would have expected them to be in the Super Bowl this time last year.
No, I mean, last year they actually had a very good quarterback in Jameis Winston. The problem was he threw loads of touchdowns, but he also threw quite a few interceptions. So he took, I mean, he kind of, what advantage he gave them, he didn't took away. So they certainly made a huge splash when they signed Tom Brady. And by having Tom Brady on your team, then other people want to be there as well. So you then got Rob Gronkowski, and you got a few more fellas that went, you know, Antonio Brown, and all of they came along, and suddenly you went from a nearly there team to a team that is going, oh, okay. And again, as we said earlier, they didn't have a preseason to gel, and that showed in their first few games. But once they started rolling there in the latter part of the season, you could certainly see the you know, they're becoming a formidable force as a team, to be fair to them.
Yeah, because obviously their record during the season, like, they got them to the wild card. I mean, like, they're the first wild card team to appear in the Super Bowl in 11 years, I think. Is it just Brady kind of just turned it on in the closing part of the season as he does, or did the whole team just start to gel, or what was it?
I think the whole team has started to gel. I mean, you know, For a professional quarterback to change teams, he obviously has to know everything that's going on. He has to learn a lot of terminology. He needs to know what the plays are. But he also then needs to get a feel for the guys he's playing with at what point will that receiver be open compared to who the guys I'm used to playing with. It takes time. And to be honest, to have got where they are after, you know, that little amount of time. I mean, sometimes this can take 2 seasons, 3 seasons for a quarterback to gel with a new team. It just shows how driven and how good Brady is. I mean, he's playing his 10th Super Bowl, which is just ridiculous, to be honest.
43 years of age as well. He's an absolute physical specimen at that age, which is almost unheard of. I mean, like, what's his secret? What's he been doing to keep him in the game this time?
He is, I mean, look, I don't think there's anyone as dedicated to keeping their body, you know, in the right place as he is. I mean, he trains, and then he trains some more. He's, like, at 43, when all other quarterbacks, are having trouble throwing the deep ball, Brady's still able to go down the field with the ball. I mean, in the playoff game there against the Packers, just before the second, or just at the end of the first half, he threw, I was at a 39 or 40 yard pass down the sideline to put it essentially a dagger in the hearts of the Packers just for halftime, which really they didn't come back from. We don't know what his diet is, but I would imagine there can't be too many sweets and cakes in there.
It's not like our diet anyway, Alan, I can tell you that for a fact.
No, definitely not.
But I suppose as well, for a 43-year-old quarterback to get to the Super Bowl, the offensive line in front of him must be top-notch.
Yeah, he has a very good line, and that is a huge part of it, because, you know, Brady's never has been a scrambling quarterback. I mean, he can get out of the pocket, but he's not a guy that will extend the play the way Aaron Rodgers does or the way Patrick Mahomes does. So, you know, I suppose that one of the keys to his longevity is to get the ball out of his hands fast. And, you know, if you get rid of the ball within, a quick look, snap, look, pass, then there's a good chance you're not going to take as many hits. And then when you put a good defense or a good offensive line in front of you, that all combines into what's happening, and you tend to get completions and touchdowns and points scored from that.
The other side then, the Kansas City Chiefs, favourites for tonight's game, coached by Andy Reid. Patrick Mahomes, their quarterback, MVP in waiting, or Hall of Famer in waiting, I guess. I mean, like, they're a very exciting team.
Yeah, I mean, they are looking to become the first repeat champion since the Patriots in 03 and 04. Patrick Mahomes, again, has had a stellar season. I mean, he threw 38 touchdowns, only 6 interceptions. I think what he brings to the table is his ability to extend plays. He gets outside the pocket. He can do more damage nearly than he would if he was standing there with plenty of time. Andy Reid is a fantastic coach. There's only been 2 teams have gone to the championship game 3 years in a row, and he's been the head coach of both. The Philadelphia Eagles and the Chiefs. And then you have their offensive coordinator, Eric Bieniemy, who is another ex-NFL guy. He was a player. And I think when you combine that, plus the talent that Mahomes has around him, Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins, and then you put in, the, I mean, they have actually some very good running backs in Edwards-Helaire and Darrell Williams. And you throw all that together, and they are an offensive juggernaut, really, is what you would put, them. You know, no, their defense isn't bad either, to be fair. You know, they have a very strong defense. I think, to be honest with you, like, the, both defenses are pretty strong. I think Kansas City's defensive secondary probably shaded a bit, to be fair.
Tonight, Alan, the Chiefs are favoured by 3, so that suggests it's going to be a tight game. How do you see it going? Will it be low scoring, or is it going to be a shootout? How do you think it's going to go?
I think it's one of those things where if Tampa Bay are to win, I think they need to avoid a shootout with the Chiefs, because I think the Chiefs just have a bit of an edge on the offensive side. I think if they ran the ball, they have a very good run game. If they ran the ball and prolong the drives, avoid turnovers, and get a bit of pressure on Mahomes, they have a good chance. If the Chiefs can stop the run early and start scoring early, get a bit of pressure on Tom and get a few turnovers, then I think the Chiefs could beat them by 2 scores. I still think the Chiefs will win by 1 score.
Yeah, looking forward to that.
I think it's going to be a very good game.
As you mentioned earlier, home field advantage hasn't really counted for much given the COVID season. It's the first time in Super Bowl history that a team has had home field advantage. But do you feel it makes a difference in the Super Bowl situation, or is it just going to be another game?
I think actually it would have made a difference if it wasn't for COVID, because they're still restricted to what they can do movements-wise anyway. So the Chiefs are only, I think the Chiefs only arrived yesterday. So they practice at home, they come down. There's no media crowds that they usually have to deal with. They did all of that on Zoom and stuff. So there's a lot of distractions taken away. I think the fact that the Chiefs were there last year as well makes it obviously a bit easier for them, which all of that, I think, negates the whole object of home field advantage for the Bucs. They're actually not even, the Bucs have the pirate ship that fires the cannons when they score, and that won't be allowed, apparently, unless they win the game. So, again, you know, I don't think it's going to make much of a difference, to be honest.
All right, you're going for the Chiefs, so by a score tonight.
I'm going 38-31 to the Chiefs.
Oh, that sounds like it'll be a good game.
Yeah, I'm hoping so, yeah.
Fingers crossed, anyway. Talk to me about the Admirals. Obviously, last season, almost a complete wipeout because of COVID. Fingers crossed, you get to play some football this year.
Yeah, we were, 3 days from our first game, I think, when the lockdown came back in March, which was very disappointing, and then they cancelled our senior season. Then after the lockdown, we got to go ahead to play the youth season, so we got the youths back. We were able to do training with the youths, and then just before the youth season start, there was another lockdown, and that got cancelled. So we've had no football. It's been, it's very strange to go out this length of time without being involved in games and stuff. We're hoping that, once we get, if things progress nicely and with vaccines and stuff, that the provisional idea is that we'd hopefully be able to maybe play a few games from June on, if all goes well. Yeah. If that happens, then it would be great, because at least we get some football. And I don't think we'll get a full season from a senior point of view in, but, even if you got to play 4 or 6 games to get some football in, it would be great.
Yeah. It must be very frustrating for the lads, I suppose. I mean, like, that close bond that you get by being in a dressing room and stuff like that, has just been, away from them.
Yeah. We had been back training since the start of January. You know, we had done the wet and the cold and all of that in training, as you do in that time of the year. Game plan was ready. And then, even if you got to play maybe one game, it mightn't have been as bad. But to have literally the whole season pulled off from one day, it was really disappointing.
Yeah.
And as I said, the same for the youths, because they had actually done the same level of training. And, have their season pulled off from under them. But look, like, as soon as we get to go ahead to go back training, we're hopefully going to get these seniors and the youths on different nights going training, so that, you know, we get our youth program, because we've invested an awful lot in our youth program over the last few years in getting lads from 15 to 18 involved in sport in American football, and to get them to you know, to be able to get to a point where they can jump into the senior squad. So we had a huge turnout this year for the youths. We had 38 guys in the youth team this year, which is unbelievable. So we're hoping again to get that ball rolling, and then obviously that pays dividends then in the senior team in a few years' time.
Have you been doing Zoom sessions and stuff like that? I suppose there's no replacement for being in the room together.
It's different. When they keep moving the goalpost of when you're going to actually get going again, it's difficult as well, because you're trying to make plans, the next thing that stopped, and next thing you make plans and it stopped again. But look, we're getting there. We were hoping that once we do get to go ahead, that we'll get training and get up to speed fairly sharpish. Obviously, the other side of things then is that, you know, and lots, nearly every club is finding the same problem, whereas you're not generating any fundraising, you're not getting any traffic that way. So, you know, we have actually, there is a Super Bowl raffle on our Facebook page, which has some great prizes in it, which is in lieu of all the Super Bowl parties. It's been run in conjunction with the league, with all the teams. So if anyone wants to go on to the Admiral's Facebook page, there's a link there to buy tickets for the raffle. And as I said, some great prizes in it. And it does, obviously, it helps support the clubs, you know, in trying to pay all the necessary bits and pieces, because we still have to pay insurance and all of that as well. So, you know, hopefully we'll get the chance to get back going again soon.
Fingers crossed, and check out that competition on the Admiral's Facebook page. And thanks for talking to us. Hopefully we'll be talking to you again later on in the year about the Admiral's. But until then, enjoy the game tonight, and we'll chat to you soon.
Rory, thanks very much, Rory. Always a pleasure. Take care.
Thank you, Alan. Always great to talk to our good friend Alan Lamassney of the Cork Admirals, ahead of the Super Bowl. It's become a tradition now, and we get the Admirals on to look ahead to the Super Bowl. And so it was great to chat to Alan. Fingers crossed, as I said, the Admirals will get to play some football this year. All right, it's all about Tom Brady tonight, appearing in his 10th Super Bowl, 43 years of age, looks ageless, whatever he is doing. I need to get that secret, because to be in a Super Bowl at 43 years of age and performing the way he is absolutely sensational. This is Brady looking ahead to tonight's game.
You know, it's been a, you know, you obviously anytime you change teams, you don't know how it's going to go, but I think there's been incredible support that I've had from, you know, all the, you know, for the team I used to play for, all the New England fans. And, you know, I still obviously have a great affection for New England. And, you know, I said the other day, my kids were born in Boston. So, I mean, I have a lot of love for Boston and all of New England and the incredible support over the years. You know, again, it was an amazing two decades of my life. And, you know, I'll always have a presence there. I have a lot of friends there. It's just really cool to be able to, you know, have that experience in my life, and then again have my football journey take me to somewhere else, and then, you know, come down here and play for a different team but still have incredible support. And even, you know, all the guys I used to play with in New England, I have a lot of friends. I've heard from so many of my teammates, so many of my old coaches that, you know, are wishing me luck. So it's been really cool.
Tom, the Pro Football Hall of Fame announcement is going to be coming Saturday night. Peyton is kind of expected to be in that class as a first ballot. How has he helped maybe revolutionize the quarterback position in the NFL?
Well, Peyton was someone that I always just admired as a quarterback, as the leader of a team. And Peyton and I are right around the same age. He's a few years older than me, but you know, I always looked up to Peyton because he was a little older than me, and he was always doing things the right way. His team was always in it. You know, I know our teams had a rivalry against one another, but when you went against a Peyton Manning led team, you were going against essentially the other best team in the league. And, it's no real surprise that, you know, he'd be a first ballot Hall of Famer. I mean, an amazing player. He took so much on. I think he, you know, like any, I think great quarterback, there's a lot of responsibility that you take on. You know, you want to make sure, you know, everything's a reflection of how you see the game, and you want to make sure everyone's on the same page. And when everyone's seeing it through the same set of eyes, it's, it's a great way to play football. And, you know, working with the coaching staff, because ultimately you're the player on the field, you know, it's, there's no perfect play that can always be called for every, you know, defense and the quarterback. They have to, you know, the coaches have to trust the quarterback to get it right. And I think a guy like Peyton, the coaches, you know, when I think of Coach Moore and Coach Clyde that were here working with Peyton, Coach Dungy, they had so much trust in Peyton to get things right. And he always did. So then he went on to Denver, had a great career there. And, you know, I had a chance to know him for, I don't know, a long time, 20 plus years. And nothing surprises me about him and his accomplishments. He's a tremendous player. We always keep in touch. He's always wishing me well wishes and so forth. And, you know, really happy for him.
Most of the people just see the rings and Phil can see how mentally strong you have to be so you can achieve the, you know, greatest status you have. Is there any turning moment in your career, like when a superhero gets his powers, you know, that you saw something clicking and you thought, no, you know, I'm a different person. You know, perhaps the final drive of Super Bowl 36, I don't know. And a quick follow-up, could you say hi to your many, many fans in Brazil? I don't know how many Portuguese words you, you know and can say, but they will be so happy.
My Portuguese, let me say this. My son, who's 10, his Portuguese is amazing. My 8-year-old daughter is fluent in Portuguese, and unfortunately their dad is way behind in his understanding of how to speak the language. But I can usually understand a lot of things. My wife will say papai no sabe nada, which means daddy doesn't know anything. I usually get that a lot in the house. So, you know, I know when they're speaking Portuguese kind of what they're saying, even if they're, you know, taking shots at their dad. So they're very, sometimes when I do use my Portuguese words, my daughter will be like, daddy, you spoke Portuguese, you know, which is pretty great. So she's very fluent. And then as far as I think my, I would say becoming an NFL player and then transitioning to a starter and then someone who was, kind of a QB1, I think that happened over a period of time. And, I started in college. I went to a big college. It was a lot of expectation at that big college and, got to the pros and wanted to be a consistent, dependable player. And I think every year just tried to improve my game a little bit and, going to have to keep improving it. And as long as I'm playing, I want to improve and get better. And I think next year is going to be a lot better than this year. You know, I feel like I'll be in a much better place mentally. I'm going to train a lot better this year. Physically, next year I'll be in a better place. So, I know as soon as this game ends, we're on the next season. So, you know, we'll get ready for this season and then start thinking about next year.
That's Tom Brady, 43 years of age in his 10th Super Bowl, giving us all hope. To be perfectly honest about it, about a 11:30 kickoff tonight, Tampa Bay Buccaneers versus the Kansas City Chiefs. Chiefs slightly favored, but looking forward to a good game for Super Bowl 55. Tonight should be an absolute cracker, as Alan Lemastney, the Cork Admirals head coach, said in our preview, and he's going for a high scoring game as well. So should be a good one tonight. Unfortunately, didn't get a chance to play Aaron Hill tonight. We had a conversation recorded with Aaron about his snooker career, but we'll push that to next weekend's show, so apologies to Aaron. Also next weekend, we're going to be talking to Cork City's Stephen Beattie about signing back for the club, and an exciting 2021 ahead, even in the First Division. First Division fixtures actually released at 1 o'clock tomorrow, so it'd be fantastic for Cork football to get Cork City and Cove Ramblers on opening day. Imagine the excitement of that. So 1 o'clock tomorrow for the fixtures, and of course we'll have a reaction from Ireland and France next weekend to pick previews on Saturday. And Moss Finn, our old friend, will be joining us on Sunday to pick bones of hopefully what would be an Ireland win, but a lot of work to do for Ireland after today's defeat in Cardiff. If you missed the show, our podcast is online. It'll be online shortly. You can get that on redfm.ie, redextra.ie, or from wherever you get your podcasts from. That's it from us for this evening. Thank you very much indeed for tuning our way. Green on Red is up next. 3 hours of the best Irish music coming your way with Conor Halpin in the hot seat tonight. Very, very best of luck to him as he takes over Green on Red tonight. So cracking couple of hours ahead tonight. So stick with us on Cork's Red FM. I'll talk to you again next weekend, folks. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday night. And Green on Red's next.
The Big Red Bench. Game on. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m.